Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking about workplace etiquette. What happened to it? Are we just a little too loose on the job with our manners? My guests are Deborah Owens, CEO and founder of Corporate Alley Cat, and Sam Sanders, human resource expert and director of people and culture with Metronome in Fairfax, Virginia. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before the break, we were talking to Jay. Jay was talking about management and how it influences culture. You want to start with something there, Sam?
Absolutely. So we have a strategy session every quarter, and our strategy session last year, we talked about one of the challenges with bringing new people in the organization, and that's protecting the culture. And so you have individuals that have grown with the organization, understand what's appropriate, understand kind of the lay of the land. You have new individuals that join the organization, and they may not be as aware. And so I have a different perspective in that the responsibility, I think, is a twofold. It is certainly management, but I also believe that the policing of that comes from your colleagues, that if you see a newcomer that's maybe breaching what's considered protocol, then it's important to, hey, pull them to the side. And that's going to be a conversation, potentially a new relationship that you can develop and correct the misappropriate behavior.
But can't that be dangerous depending on who that colleague is and what the perceived slight or violation is?
Well, Harold, if I could jump in, I would agree with Sam, but I would also say it's incumbent on the individual to seek out people to get information. If you're at a new organization and it's way different than the one you've come from, then you need to ask some questions, right? You need to find someone, whether it's somebody in HR, someone who appears to be well-respected in the organization, someone who's been around a long time, and find out, hey, how do you guys do this? Or I noticed after the strategy meeting, everybody stayed for the coffee meet and greet. So again, in some organizations, after the meeting, they have a meet and greet. Everybody stays. That's really important. Where in some organizations, people scatter. So if you're not sure, it's incumbent on the individual to ask.
But what if you don't know what you don't know and you don't know to ask?
Well, I think that if you don't know and if you're feeling a little uncomfortable.
I didn't say you were feeling uncomfortable.
No, I'm just saying if you don't know, but part of you don't know what you don't know, but sometimes you feel a little like, I'm not sure if they do it this way here.
Right. I guess my question is, based on what Sam was suggesting, and if you're new and your blouse is just a little too plungy, you know, I may see that. I'm not going to tell you that.
Absolutely. And, you know, if I could, I want to say that because we work with professionals of color, that oftentimes professionals of color don't get a lot of feedback. So someone to a black woman may feel uncomfortable saying, well, that's a great dress, but it's a little, for this organization, that's perceived that way. Again, I think you have to have some level of awareness about where you are.
Okay.
That there's no substitute for that, whether you call it emotional IQ or just being observant.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
And careful.
Yeah. Give you an example, Harold. When I come on your show, I am professionally dressed. Now, nobody sees me here, right, but I take my lead from you.
Yeah, because I take a picture of you after the show. There's that, too.
But you see what I'm saying? So I play on the conservative first time around. I don't know what Harold's going to be wearing, but I'm going to come in my Sunday best because you're always safe. Now, when I come, now if I saw you in shorts and jeans, then the next time I came, I might be in jeans. But whenever I see you, you're dressed to the nines. So I got to up my game.
Well, thank you so much. 202-319. Oh, by the way, Jay, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Deborah calling from Northeast. Thanks for hanging on, Deborah. What's on your mind?
Yes, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
I went on an interview on Thursday, and when I went on an interview on Thursday, I noticed that it was a mental health facility, right? And I noticed a girl who kind of didn't treat the patients right, and I didn't know she worked there until she went around to the desk. I'm like, oh my goodness, right? I got to deal with this. So can you tell me, how do I deal with this girl? Because I started working Tuesday. I didn't like the way she treated the people, because you're not supposed to treat them like that. You're supposed to be professional at all times.
Interesting. If you're going in the door and your standards may be higher than the place that you're working in. How do you address that?
So I think it's simple. You demonstrate what's appropriate behavior. So if you're going in and you are a newcomer and you have identified behavior or a system of behaviors that you feel are inappropriate or are not in line with the company's goals or objectives, then you demonstrate what's appropriate behavior. And the goal there is to, in hopes that the person will at some point catch on or understand what is acceptable.
Deborah, looks like Deborah probably would be the one who sets the example.
Yes. And I would say, if I heard it correctly, that she went into this organization for an interview. And when she was at the interview, she noticed somebody treating somebody incorrectly. I would say that's a cue, right? You're already learning something about this organization. They're giving you access to how at least one or two of the people work. So I think you need to keep this in mind. Like, is this an organization that I want to be a part of? Is this a random occurrence, or is this kind of the norm here? Because if it is the norm here, then what your burden is going to be to go in there and you're going to change how everyone in that organization operates. Is that what you want to do? If it's not, you need to step back and say, is this the type of organization, if this is representative, and you can ask some questions, you can do some research, you can go on Glassdoor, you can go on Monster, you can talk to people, because now you've got an inkling. So when you said you don't know, you know something.
Sure.
You've seen something that you didn't like. I would say step back, do some research, because I would not want to walk in on day one knowing that I don't like the way these people treat their patients.
I agree. I think, again, doing the necessary research to understand, is this normal day to day for this organization? And if so, can I really be a part of this?
Let me go back to the phone lines, and good luck to you, Deborah. Let me go to Pam. Pam calling from Virginia. Pam, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello. How are you today?
Just fine.
I'm calling because I work for the federal government. And as with all due respect to your panel, this, you know, it's not going to work. It doesn't work. I've been in the federal government 33 years, and you've got everybody dressing every kind of way. And if you tell somebody they're inappropriate, then you've harassed somebody, okay? You've harassed somebody because you've got so many people. And it's not just the millennials. It's the 65-year-old, the 70-year-old, who comes in flip-flops and shorts during the summer and no tie, no matter what. And there's no – this is the problem, or the key, rather, is that in the federal government there is no dress code. So – and there – you cannot make someone go through a dress code when there isn't one. You can gingerly suggest, you know, maybe you want to put something else on. But then you're, like I said, you're running the risk of getting an EEO filed against you.
So let's briefly get into that, because I think there are two pieces to that. In Pam's case, she may say that someone, you know, a guy, for example, if he is inappropriately dressed, she may find his dress offensive. But if she tells him, he may be offended. So how do you find a middle ground with that when it comes to HR? Or do you have to look to the management and see what they're wearing?
Can I interject real quick?
Sure.
And that's the key. You just said that. Management, you've got some dressing in a suit and tie. You got some SESs dressing in a suit and tie. And some wearing flip-flops and a, you know, Hawaiian shirt. And so what are you going to say to who?
Yeah. Okay. Sam, real quick.
So I think it's a matter, you're not dealing with a policy issue here. You're dealing with a culture issue. So it's not a matter of you having something outlined in a handbook. And in the case that you're describing, it sounds like there is no dress code. And so from that perspective, it really sounds like it might be a matter of preference, because the culture is already set. The culture is you can wear what you want. You can wear a Hawaiian shirt. You can wear your maxi dress, and it seems appropriate. for this particular entity. So I think here we have a cultural issue in that we've not defined what is acceptable for from an attire perspective.
Okay. Pam, thank you so much. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Eric, calling from Bowie. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, sir. I'm ex-military, so I might have a more stringent view on this. But as the young lady that just spoke stated that there was no policy, I believe that's part of the problem. Take tattoos, for instance, in the military. When I was in, if you weren't in the Navy, you didn't have a tattoo. Now you have these young men and women, soldiers, airmen, sailors, who have all these tattoos, but the requirement is they can't be seen if they're wearing their dress uniform or their Class B uniform. So I think from the perspective of private industry, there just needs to be a code of ethics. There needs to be dress code policies and things of that nature that are written that everyone must adhere to. I'm starting my own business, and thanks to listening to this program, I forgot about the dress code, but that's something I'm going to write in my policies and then have it reviewed by legal just to make sure that it can stand, because I think, this generation is kind of driving things and making things more relaxed. And I'm somewhat okay with that. But, you know, if a young woman comes in a camisole and short skirt, I'm just not okay with that. I'm just not. So I would definitely say something. Excuse me, darling. You know, if you could wear, you know, something that covers up more.
Well, let me stop you right there, Eric, because you dropped the D word. You dropped the darling. So already you're in the hole.
Well, see, now that's something else, because even when I was in training, I'm just saying this from the perspective of being a gentleman. I'm not trying to hit on anyone or anything like that, but so many things are misconstrued, and you have to tippy-toe around so many issues. And I would just rather say, look, if it's not for religious purposes, please wear appropriate business attire. For men, that's a collared shirt, whether it be a polo, doctors that have been ironed.
Hold on, Eric. Let me ask Deborah to help you keep your business afloat right now, because I've already heard a lot of red flags.
Actually, I think this would probably be better with Sam, just from an HR perspective.
Okay.
Because I think we're talking here policy, and even though he said politically correct and things were misconstrued, there were a couple of things in there that, from the get go, as a woman.
So when you are deciding, obviously, to start an organization, you want to start with, what does that look like? What do I want the look and feel of the organization to be? And that's how you develop. That's how you begin the development process for your policies and how will my business operate? And so when you talk about that, it's important to identify clearly what you want your dress code to be. But also with that, my challenge to the caller is, if a person has a tattoo, or if the person has a shorter skirt than what you're used to, does that change the competency of that person? Does that change the work output?
But I'm not. I want to drill down. Hold on, Eric. Hold on. I want to drill down deeper. Sure. I want to talk about some real foundational stuff. Unless her name is Darlin, he can't call her Darlin.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Sure.
And, you know, unless that's what her mother called her. If her name is Susan, then it's, excuse me, Susan. If you're talking about what is politically correct and what isn't politically correct, I would argue that that is not a phrase that you cannot use in an HR conversation.
Sure. And I think, one, when we talk about, so people throw out, you know, sexual harassment or what's considered appropriate, inappropriate in that way. And so first, the first thing to consider is harassment isn't harassment until I first have identified that this is inappropriate. So if I say something to Ms. Owens that is considered inappropriate, she then says to me, hey, I didn't really appreciate that. Can you please stop? At the point that I continue that discussion in an inappropriate manner, using a term that's offensive, that's when it becomes an HR issue.
Mm-hmm. So I've got to take a break, but certainly, Eric, you know, I do want you to be successful in your business. And as you said, as a result of this conversation, you've got some things you've got to sit down and think about, so that, you know, you will be able to have a successful business without any of the muckety-muck of HR issues and otherwise. So thank you so much. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Robert, calling from Hyattsville. And we're also going to talk about some don'ts, not do's, but don'ts when it comes to manners on the job. Stay with us, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We're talking about workplace etiquette. I want to go back to the phone lines. Robert calling from Hyattsville. Robert, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
All right, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been working on Capitol Hill for about 9 years. And what gets me is the lack of people that do not even know how to say please or thank you. I'm a baker, and every once in a while, well, a few times a year, I will bring in a cheesecake or another cake from scratch. There are about 20 people in my division in my office. And all the people that eat it, I might get a thank you from maybe 5 or 6. But I can see you licking your fingers. I can see a napkin at your desk. But, you know, I don't need anybody singing my praises, but a basic thank you. Mm-hmm. Now, these are from grown, college-educated people. That is what makes my blood boil. If I'm eating anybody's food, the first thing I want to say is thank you.
How about that? You know, Robert, you and I are kindred spirits. Please, thank you, and you're welcome. Three of the most important words or phrases, I believe, in the English language. What's going on with that?
You know what? I say that goes back to good home training, really.
Yes.
Because whether it's the person who empties your trash, when we have people, before I came here, we had somebody who was emptying my trash. How are you doing? Thank you. Because their job is critically important to the organization. So one of the things that you can't do enough of is to say please to people, and more importantly, a thank you. When a colleague goes out of their way to put in a good word for you, thank you. When somebody does a great job, thank you. I think it's those little things that really endear you to other people and to help you build those real relationships. Because everybody wants to feel like their efforts are appreciated and everybody can give a thank you.
And you should always make sure that the guy who's bringing the cheesecake is treated well.
he might deserve a handwritten note on occasion to say thank you, because you want to incentivize them to keep bringing the cheesecakes.
That's right.
Sure. So I there's a book. It's called The Question Behind the Question. And the premise of this book deals with I can't change the behavior of others, but what I can change is my behavior. And so we're challenged every day with people that are rude, that are inconsiderate. And so I think in that situation, to the caller, to encourage good manners is to simply say, hey, thank you for coming in. Thank you for visiting me today. Hmm. And maybe that will spur what is considered good manners.
Lead by example. Robert, you keep baking those cakes, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate your phone call. I want to talk, before I go to Terrell, I want to talk about some don'ts. Forbes magazine has published having good manners on the job. And the first one is so critical to what is happening right now. The Chipotle in Northern Virginia that had the norovirus outbreak, it was revealed today that an employee who was sick did not stay home. And that is what has contributed to the norovirus outbreak that sickened staff and customers. And the first thing that this Forbes magazine list says is stay home when you're sick. Now, here's the problem with that. Some jobs, they just want you to work, sick or not. How do you address that?
Well, I think you have to use your own common sense, not only for the health of the people in the organization, but for your own health. So I'm an advocate of putting your health first. But I think that is tricky in some organizations, because some organizations culturally, unless you are in the hospital, mm-hmm. they expect that you should be at the job. Now, the other thing is there are people who abuse sick leave,
yeah.
right? So sometimes you may see it in an individualized approach, like, is this the fifth time Sam has called in sick this week? Now, some people generally may have those health issues, but there are some people who abuse that policy. But I think overall, that's where you have to make a decision based on your conscience. Are you going to come into work and infect other people? or are you going to stay home and make sure that you're healed before you come in? And then you, from an HR perspective, I've seen organizations where, you know, they are just not that accommodating.
Sure. And I come from an organization that was of the persuasion that unless you were on your deathbed, then you should be present at work. There are other organizations, and I'm fortunate to be a part of that organization, that if you're not feeling well, it's totally appropriate to miss the day. But also, I think this is where the work from home policies come into play. So the flexibility, the autonomy there to, hey, if I'm not feeling well, I don't want to impact my colleagues. So giving me the opportunity to work from home can be a way for businesses to still meet their daily objectives and for the employee to kind of segregate themselves as to not affect the rest of the workforce.
Can I just say one thing about that work from home when you're sick? I think the other thing, just as our society has evolved, I think there are some good things about work at home, but I also think there are some bad things. When people are sick, working at home, just because you're laying in bed, if you are on the computer, you are still working and your body is not able to heal. So not to you, but to people out there, some days you are sick and you need to shut the computer down. You need to let your organization know that I am sick today. I will be off. I will not be able to respond to emails. And I think many organizations are very accommodating. But I think you don't want to set this pattern that because I'm sick, just know I'm still going to be working, because that misses the point of being able to give yourself time to heal.
Let me go to Terrell calling from Charles County. Hey, Terrell, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, how you doing? Let's have a quick question and comment. Mm-hmm. You know, and I didn't know this was so true. I have a friend of mine that she's a human resources director. And she used to blow my mind when she said, you know, and within the first 30 seconds, I could determine if I'm going to hire you. I said, what? She was like, yeah, how you cross your legs, how your hair is cut. She said, I said, that's kind of like profiling. She said, no, it's not. She said, that's why my turnover rate is so low. She said, because within that time, and y'all just hit on point on everything, and it was like, okay, now I have to call and apologize to her because you all were telling, she was telling the truth. So I just wanted to say, you know, first of all, good evening to your panel, you, Mr. Harrell. But y'all are on time, man, because I thought she was lying. I didn't know that people can actually sit back and, because I thought it was stereotyping.
Well, let me say that I don't believe that we said specifically that you can determine whether or not you're going to hire somebody in within 30 seconds. I think that one of the things that we were saying is that you can determine the culture of a workplace early in that interview process, depending on what you're exposed to. And also they can perhaps tell something, you know, about you depending on, you know, how that conversation may go. But that does not necessarily mean that right off the top they know what they're going to do about hiring you. Your friend, however, may be magical or whatever. You just
that's what I thought too, Mr. Yeah. I'm not gonna lie to you. I was like, okay, you must be that in tune with the good Lord.
Well, and let me say, you know, and Sam can address this, I'm sure, that, you know, certainly during the hiring process, first impressions are important.
They are, and you know, the great state of North Carolina has a motto that says "esse quam videri," which is to be rather than to seem. So, it's more than just showing up with you know, a nice suit. I think we've mastered that. You know, showing up with your hair combed appropriately. It's being competent in what position you're applying for. So, I think there's much more to the interview process than just showing up. You know, you have to be able to perform. You know, that we don't want empty suits. We don't want the person that you represented in the interview is the person that we're expecting to show up every day.
And I think organizations have put in place a system so you don't have that bias, so you don't have a person who says, oh, Harold, we don't like you. We just don't first 30 seconds. So now in most cases, you're going to interview with a multitude of people. You're going to have panels so that you can get different perspectives, different insights. People are looking for different things. So I think those days of kind of one person doing the hiring and you only talk to one person, I think those days are going by the wayside.
Okay.
It depends on the environment that you're in. I'm certain at, you know, maybe McDonald's or those
right.
types of roles, there might be one person that's interviewing and they make the decision.
If you'd like to make a call.
This looks like we lost Terrell. Real quick, I want to run through these because I only have a few minutes left. But I think that And some of these are actually, rather interesting. People who are talking loud on the telephone, people that you know, bring in, you know, smelling food like kimchi for, you know, for lunch. Here we have a policy, you know, no fish, no, you know, no seafood, you know, fried, because it, you smell it through the entire, you know, station. So, you know, that's obviously an issue. Here's my pet peeve. Midnight or early in the morning email. Unless there's breaking news, do you have to email me at 3 a.m.?
I think the bigger question is, if somebody sends you an email at 3 a.m., do you have to respond to it?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
That's the question.
Exactly, yeah.
Because what happens is when you have organizations and your leader or your boss's boss sends you an email at 6 a.m. in the morning, you think, wow, I got to respond to this. And so that's where the culture of the organization comes into play. Is it okay for people to send those emails? I think it is. I think what's wrong is when there is an expectation that if I send you an email at 3 a.m., then I need to have a response by 5 a.m. I think that's where the issue comes in. And I can tell you, I was with an organization where we did so much emailing that we actually had a policy. And the policy was from Friday at 6 o'clock p.m. until Sunday, I think it was at 7 o'clock p.m., you could not send emails. Now, you can work and you can queue them up, but you cannot send them because of that same issue.
Also, let's talk about ringtones. I mean, at some point, Lemonade or Two Live Crew ringtones are probably just not important. So how do you you like that, didn't you, Sam? Yeah. So how do you address that? Should your phone be on vibrate in the office or...
So I would say it goes back to your brand. Yeah. And what do you want your brand to do? Now, if you don't mind that you're in a meeting and your phone isn't on vibrate and Shake Your Booty comes on and everybody turns around and looks at you, if you don't mind that, then that's fine. But I guarantee you some people are going to be like, what was that all about?
Exactly.
Now, so I think you have to think about those small things.
Sure.
Yeah. They're important.
Unless, of course, the CEO is P. Diddy, then you're just fine.
Then you're just fine.
There you go. Sam Sanders and Deborah Owens, thank you both so much. I appreciate it. And we hope we're going to help that guy start his business and keep his business as well.
So absolutely.
Thanks for having me.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Wednesday, July 26th. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisherWHUR or Daily Drum WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.